Protocol number 21, loans and credit. To what I reported to you at the last meeting, I shall now add a detailed explanation of internal loans. Of foreign loans, I shall say nothing more because they have fed us with the national monies of the goyim, but for our state, there will be no foreigners, that is, nothing external. We have taken advantage of the venality of administrators and the slackness of rulers to get our monies twice, thrice, and more times over, by lending to the Goy government's monies which were not at all needed by the states. Could anyone do the like in regard to us? Therefore, I shall only deal with the details of internal loans. States announced that such a loan is to be concluded and open subscriptions for their own bills of exchange, that is, for their interest-bearing paper, that they may be within the reach of all prices determined at form from 100 to 1,000, and a discount is made for the earliest subscribers. Next day, by artificial means, the price of them goes up, the alleged reason being that everyone is rushing to buy them. In a few days, the treasury safes are, as they say, overflowing, and there's more money than you can do with. Why then take it? The subscription, it is alleged, covers many times over the issue total of the loan. In this lies the whole stage effect. Look you, they say, what confidence is shown in the government's bills of exchange. But when the comedy is played out, there emerges the fact that a debit, and of exceedingly burdensome debit, has been created. For the payment of interest, it becomes necessary to have resource to new loans, which do not swallow up, but only add to the capital debt. And when this credit is exhausted, it becomes necessary by new taxes to cover not the loan, but only the interest on it. These taxes are a debit employed to cover a debit. Later comes the time for conversions, but they diminish the payment of interest without covering the debt, and besides, they cannot be made without consent of the lenders. On announcing a conversion, a proposal is made to return the money to those who are not willing to convert their paper. If everybody expressed his unwillingness and demanded his money back, the government would be hooked on their own lies and would be found insolvent and unable to pay the proposed sums. By good luck, the subjects of the Goy governments, knowing nothing about financial affairs, have always preferred losses on exchange and diminution of interest to the risk of new investments of their monies, and have thereby many a time enabled these governments to throw off their shoulders a debit of several millions. Nowadays, with external loans, these tricks cannot be played by the goyim, for they know that we shall demand all our monies back. In this way, an acknowledged bankruptcy will best prove that to the various countries the absence of any means between the interests of the peoples and of those who rule them. I beg you to concentrate your particular attention upon this point and upon the following. Nowadays, all internal loans are consolidated by so-called flying loans, that is, such as have terms of payment more or less near. These debts consist of monies paid into the savings banks and reserve funds. If left for long at the disposition of a government, these funds evaporate in the payment of interest on foreign loans and are replaced by the deposit of equivalent amount of rents. And these last, it is which patch up the leaks in the state treasuries of the goyim. When we ascend to the throne of the world, all these financial and similar shifts, as being not in accord with our interests, will be swept away so as not to leave a trace, as also will be destroyed all money markets, since we shall not allow the prestige of our power to be shaken by fluctuations of prices set upon our values, which we shall announce by law at the price which represents their full worth without any possibility of lowering or raising. Raising gives the pretext for lowering, which indeed was where we made a beginning in relation to the values of the goyim. We shall replace the money markets by grandiose government credit institutions, the object of which will be to fix the price of industrial values in accordance with government views. These institutions will be in a position to fling upon the market 500 millions of industrial paper in one day, or to buy up for the same amount. In this way, all industrial undertakings will come into dependence upon us. You may imagine for yourselves what immense power we shall thereby secure for ourselves. End of protocol number 21. Protocol number 22, the power of gold. In all that has so far been reported by me to you, I have endeavored to depict with care the secret of what is coming, of what is past, and of what is going on now. Rushing into the flood of the great events coming already in the near future, the secret of our relations to the Goyim and of financial operations. On this subject, there remains still a little for me to add. In our hands is the greatest power of our day, gold. In 2 days, we can procure from our storehouses any quantity we may please. Surely there is no need to seek further proof that our rule is predestined by God. Surely we shall not fail with such wealth to prove that all that evil, which for so many centuries we have had to commit, as has served at the end of ends the cause of true well-being, the bringing of everything into order. Though it be even by the exercise of some violence, yet all the same it will be established. We shall contrive to prove that we are benefactors who have restored to the rend and the mangled earth the true good and also freedom of the person. And therewith we shall enable it to be enjoyed in peace and quiet, with proper dignity of relations, on the condition, of course, of strict observance of the laws established by us. We shall make plain therewith that freedom does not consist in dissipation and in the right of unbridled license any more than the dignity and force of a man do not consist in the right for everyone to promulgate destructive principles in the nature of freedom of conscience, equality, and the like. That freedom of the person in no wise consists in the right to agitate oneself and others by abominable speeches before disorderly mobs, and that true freedom consists in the inviolability of the person who honorably and strictly observes all the laws of life in common. That human dignity is wrapped up in consciousness of the rights and also of the absence of rights of each, and not wholly and solely in fantastic imaginings about the subject of one's ego. Our authority will be glorious because it will be all-powerful, will rule and guide, and not muddle along after leaders and orators shrieking themselves hoarse with senseless words, which they call great principles, and which are nothing else, to speak honestly, but utopian. Our authority will be the crown of order, and in that is included the whole happiness of man. The aureole of this authority will inspire a mystical bowing of the knee before it and a reverent fear before it of all the peoples. True force makes no terms with any right, not even with that of God. None dare come near to it so as to take so much as a span away from it. End of protocol number 22.